Blog Talk Radio.
Friday to you all. This is your host, Brandon Scher, and welcome to the New Heights Show on Education. The New Heights Educational Group and Corporation promotes literacy for children and adults by offering a range of educational support services. Such services include assisting families in the selection of schools, organization of educational activities, and acquisition of materials. We promote a healthy learning environment and enrichment programs for families of preschool and school-age children, including children with special needs. The New Heights Educational Group offers support to all students, whether in public schools, private schools, charter schools, or to homeschooled students. Today's show is dedicated to poet and writer Miss Emily Dickinson, whose works have been enjoyed for over a century. To learn more about our organization, visit us online at www.newheightseducation.org, or you can contact the New Heights Educational Group directly by calling 419-786-0247. You can also email us at newheightseducation@yahoo.com. Please remember to push follow us for updates on upcoming shows, or you can visit our website to see host bios and keep track of your favorite hosts and all of our shows. Here are the following announcements from the New Heights Educational Group for the week. The New Heights Educational Group is in the planning stages for this year's in-person educational classes. We are looking to provide culinary, jewelry making, candle making, other arts and crafts, and other classes. Please contact us if you're interested. These have arrived and are being added to the New Heights Educational Group website on an ongoing basis. You can also visit our YouTube or website to view our classes. We need more teachers and tutors in person and online. Please reach out to us if you can help. Check out our published book, One Nonprofit's Journey to Success, which is an inspiring story of the New Heights Educational Group and its rise as a nonprofit organization. Please visit our site for information on how you can purchase this inspiring book. If you have already purchased and read the story, please leave a review for us on Amazon.com. Ms. Pamela Clark, founder and executive director, received the Bronze, Silver, and Gold Presidential Volunteer Service Awards and a letter from the White House signed by the President. Margaret Spangler, co-founder and board member, presented the awards to Mrs. Clark. She stated, quote, "It is quite an achievement," and said, "has shown a lot of dedication in building up the New Heights Educational Group." A special thank you goes out to Venkata Pologartha from Canton, California, and Allie Barker from Sagrin Falls, Ohio, for their recent car donations. We received $232.88. We appreciate your support. Thank you. A special thank you goes out to Thriven Financial Services for their recent $25 donation. Thank you for all of your support. Now back to today's show, in which we'll be talking about writer and poet Emily Dickinson. I would like to start off today's show with a quote from Emily Dickinson. "They might not need me, but they might. I'll let my head smile as small as mine might be precisely their necessity." A poet who took definition as her province, Emily Dickinson challenged the existing definitions of poetry and the poet's work. Like writers such as Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, and Walt Whitman, she experimented with expression in order to free it from conventional restraints. Like writers such as Charlotte Bronte and Elizabeth Barrett Browning, she crafted a new type of persona for the first person. The speakers in Dickinson's poetry, like those in Bronte's and Browning's works, are sharp-sighted observers who see the inescapable limitations of their societies, as well as their imagined and imaginable escapes. To make the abstract tangible, to define meaning without confining it, to inhabit a house that never became a prison, Dickinson created in her writing a distinctively elliptical language for expressing what was possible, but not yet realized. Like the conquered transcendentalist, whose works she knew well, she saw poetry as a double-edged sword. It liberated the individual, it as readily left him ungrounded. The literary marketplace, however, offered new ground for her work in the last decade of the 19th century. When the first volume of her poetry was published in 1890, 4 years after her death, it met with stunning success. Going through 11 editions in less than 2 years, the poems eventually extended far beyond their first household audiences. To get a glimpse of Emily Dickinson's poetry style, I have chosen to share a poem with all of you called A Bird Came Down the Walk. A Bird Came Down the Walk by Emily Dickinson. A bird came down the walk. He did not know I saw. He bit an angleworm in half. And then he drank a dew from a convenient grass. And then hopped sidewise to the wall to let a beetle pass. He glanced of rapid eyes that hurried all abroad. They looked like frightened beads, I thought. He stirred his velvet head. Like one in danger, cautious, I offered him a crumb, and he unrolled his feathers and rode him to home. Then oars divide the ocean, too silver for a seam, or butterflies off banks of noon leap splashless as they swim. Born in 1830 in Amherst, Massachusetts, where her paternal grandfather, Samuel Dickinson, had been integral in the founding of Amherst College, the family lived in Samuel Dickinson's household called the Homestead. At the age of 9, Emily moved with her family to a house on North Pleasant Street in Amherst. Growing up in an academic family, Emily Dickinson's father saw that her education was well-rounded. Despite his desire that his children receive an education, however, her father was also very strict about the types of literature allowed into the house. Walt Whitman, for example, was not allowed and was considered, quote, inappropriate by Emily Dickinson's father. Emily Dickinson developed an independent streak, which evidenced itself in her writing for the rest of her life in response to the literary stifling of her father. During her teenage years, Emily Dickinson discovered poetry through the works of William Wordsworth and Ralph Waldo Emerson, having been introduced to both by a lawyer named Benjamin Franklin Newton, who had been in the employ of her father. Newton, who died of tuberculosis when Emily Dickinson was still young, encouraged her to continue writing poetry, which had great effect on Emily Dickinson's future. Calvinist revivals swept the nation during Emily Dickinson's youth. While she was initially overjoyed to take part in these religious gatherings, she soon found that worshiping in her own home was more satisfying. In a poem written around this time, she wrote, quote, "Some keep the Sabbath going to church. I keep it staying at home," end quote. Her privacy and relationship with God figured heavily into her writing from that point onward. Dickinson came of age during the American Enlightenment, an era in which many of the most progressive thinkers of the day, such as Ralph Waldo Emerson, were dissatisfied with organized religion and sought God through new schools of spiritual thought. But a 17-year-old Dickinson was a little more dissatisfied. Attending Mount Holyoke at the time, she found solace in studying the sign and considered herself a pagan. When her headmistress asked who among her classmates sought salvation, Dickinson refused to lie. Faith is a fine invention. When gentlemen can see, but microscopes are prudent in an emergency, is what Emily Dickinson told her headmistress. As a young woman, Emily Dickinson was vibrant and hopeful. She wrote that she hoped to be the Belle of Elmhurst at 17. As time progressed, however, Emily Dickinson became more and more melancholy, preferring to stay indoors at her family's home. She spent 1 year away from Amherst at the Mount Holyoke Female Seminary, but left abruptly after sending a message to her brother Austin to retrieve her at all events. Biographers differ on the rationale behind Emily Dickinson's flight from Mount Holyoke. Whatever the reason, it marked the last instance of any prolonged absence from her home in Amherst. By the age of 20, Emily Dickinson had begun the path to seclusion that would define the rest of her life. The deaths of several family friends and mentors had begun weighing heavily on Emily's mind. The death of Leonard Humphrey, the principal of the Amherst Academy, who had been both a friend and tutor to Emily Dickinson, furthered her depression. She wrote to a friend, quote, "The hour of evening is sad. It was once my study hour. My master has gone to rest, and the open leaf of the book, and the scholar at school alone, make the tears come, and I cannot brush them away. I would not if I could, for they are the only tribute I can pay, the departed, Humphrey." Because of her discomfort and shyness in social situations, Emily gradually reduced her social contacts, going out less and less into society. By her late 20s, this has led to an almost complete seclusion, spending most of her time in the family house, rarely meeting others from outside a close family circle. Her sister explains this wasn't a sudden decision, but a gradual process that happened over a period of time. However, despite the physical seclusion, Emily still maintained written contact with a variety of thought-provoking people. It is also clear from the poetry that her decision to live a life as a recluse did not close her mind, but in many ways allowed the flow of new avenues of thought and inner experiences. I decided to choose a poem by Emily Dickinson that I think kind of touches a little bit on her seclusion and her shyness in life. And this is a pretty popular poem called "I Am Nobody, Who Are You?" "I'm Nobody, Who Are You?" by Emily Dickinson. "I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? But then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd advertise, you know. How dreary to be somebody. How public like a frog. To tell one's name the livelong day to an admiring bog." The year 1855 brought several upheavals in Dickinson's life. First, she journeyed to visit her father, who was a congressman in Washington, D.C., and from there to Philadelphia, where she met a minister named Charles Wadsworth, with whom she would consult regarding her thoughts on life and religion until his death in 1882. That same year, Emily Dickinson's father moved the family back to his father's home, the homestead, where Emily would live for the rest of her life. The following year, Emily Dickinson's brother, Austin, married Emily's longtime friend, Susan Huntington Gilbert, and purchased the house next to the homestead, which he named the Evergreen. Emily and Susan remained lifelong friends And despite their proximity, Susan was Emily's favorite correspondent, receiving some 300 letters from Emily throughout their friendship. Susan, who was also a writer, would from time to time offer Emily Dickinson editorial advice and was the recipient of more than 250 poems from Emily Dickinson. While initially involved with a social gathering that took place at the Evergreen, Emily Dickinson continued to become more and more reclusive as the 1850s wore on. As her mother's health began to fail, Emily Dickinson spent more and more time in the family home. Emily Dickinson's father, Edward, had a conservatory added to the homestead to facilitate Emily Dickinson's love of gardening year-round. Emily Dickinson also had her own room in which she spent much of her time writing poetry and letters. The conservatory and a quiet place for writing enabled Emily Dickinson to stay busy while remaining close to her ailing mother, as she was in constant need of attention. Withdrawing even further into seclusion, Emily Dickinson began the most productive part of her writing career in 1858, reviewing and rewriting poems she'd already written, as well as beginning many new poems. From 1858 to 1861, Emily Dickinson also wrote what have come to be called the Master Letters, in which she addresses an unknown master with whom scholars have theorized Emily Dickinson had a romantic relationship. In addition to her sister-in-law, Susan, Emily Dickinson also began sending many of her poems to literary critic Thomas Wentworth Higginson, whose piece called Letter to a Young Contributor in the Atlantic Monthly had done much to inspire Emily Dickinson to continue her writing. Dickinson served as advisor and editor to Emily Dickinson, as well as helping her through some of her darker moments. Emily Dickinson, in 1862, went so far as to tell Higginson that he had, quote, saved her life, end quote. Undergoing several painful surgeries in the middle of the 1860s, Emily Dickinson spent several months at a hospital in Boston. These were the last times she left Amherst. Upon her return, she retreated further into the seclusion of the homestead, rarely leaving and speaking with visitors through her closed door. She also became known as the Woman in White due to her proclivity for wearing all white on the rare occasion she was seen outside of the homestead. Despite her reclusive nature, Emily Dickinson had several suitors, including Otis Phillips Lord, who had worked with her father. Lord and his wife had been frequent visitors to the homestead, and the newly widowed Lord visited Emily Dickinson often. They shared a prolific correspondence, and some scholars speculate that there is evidence that Emily planned to marry Lord, although these plans never actually came to fruition. Toward the end of her life, Emily Dickinson began to write less and less poetry. Still a fervent letter writer, she now focused on caring for her ailing mother, tending to her garden and performing household tasks. Several local poets encountered Emily Dickinson's work at this time and attempted to convince her that she should publish. She declined, however, although several of her poems were published anonymously during this period. Her garden became her primary focus. Dickinson biographer Judith Farr writes that Emily Dickinson, quote, was known more widely as a gardener, perhaps, than a poet, until after her death. She enjoyed being able to travel the world simply by tending to the various strains of flowers and plants which occupied the conservatory in her household. She also would frequently include a verse with a bunch of flowers sent to a friend, although she speculated that the flowers were enjoyed more highly than the poetry that was included with them. Known for her pervasive use of an orthodox punctuation, rhythm, and syntax in her poetry, Dickinson didn't adhere to the traditions or rules of the genre. And while there are many interpretations of what her dashes, and consistently varied in length and direction mean, some scholars believe it was Dickinson's way of stating her freedom, that she and her art could not be confined by a simple period. other recital was her way of interrupting a thought or bringing thoughts together. The final years of Emily Dickinson's life were marred by many deaths. Father passed away suddenly while on a trip to Boston in 1874. Though his funeral was held in a homestead, Emily Dickinson did not attend, opting to remain in her room with the door ajar. Her mother suffered a paralyzing stroke in 1875, which rendered her immobile and in an impaired mental state. Her favorite pastor, Charles Wadsworth, died in 1882, only 5 months before her mother. Otis Taylor Lord died in 1884 after a prolonged illness, prompting Emily Dickinson to write that Taylor was, quote, our latest loss, end quote. The youngest son of her brother, Austin, took ill and died in 1883, at which point Emily Dickinson wrote, quote, the dyings have been too deep for me, end quote. Emily Dickinson's health began to decline after the death of her nephew and never returned. Emily Dickinson died on May 15th of 1886 of Bright's disease. After her death, her younger sister was tasked with organizing and destroying Emily's letters. She carried out this task and, in doing so, discovered 1,700 of Emily's poems, which were organized and published with the help of Emily's longtime friend, Thomas Wentworth Higginson. Emily Dickinson's legacy certainly lives on today, and many poets and writers are still influenced by her writing. There is actually a museum in Amherst, Massachusetts, dedicated to Miss Emily Dickinson, that provides tours to allow people to learn more about the life of a legendary poet. To end our program today, I would like to share with you a quote from Emily Dickinson's poem called Hope is a Thing with Feathers. Hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tunes without the words and never stops at all. Thank you all for listening to today's program, and I hope you enjoyed our segment on Miss Emily Dickinson. On next week's episode, we will be discussing American poet and journalist Walt Whitman. Don't forget the Kathy Woodring Show is now once a month on the first Sunday of every month. My show airs every Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great weekend, everyone, and I will see you all next Friday.